We want to welcome everyone this morning to our Bible class. If you're visiting with us, we appreciate you being here today. Please turn, if you will, to the book of Mark chapter 11. We're going to continue our lesson, but also our thoughts in that chapter today. As you know, we have been looking at the last part of the life of Jesus while he was on this earth. He's probably going to spend another 6 to 7 days as we look at this text in Mark chapter 11. For your reference, remember also we're looking at the other Gospels as well, not in completeness, not as a harmony of the Gospels, but certainly you want to remind yourself of Matthew chapter 21, because there's a lot to be said about what's taking place here in the temple with Jesus and the apostles and those who are listening. And so it just makes sense to get the full context, but also get the full gist of what is being said by Mark, but also by Matthew, but also by Luke, and also by John. And so all three of these gospel writers are talking about the last part of the life of Jesus. Now, we have noticed that as the servant of God in this particular section, that Jesus is seen as one who has now entered into the city of Jerusalem, something he's been looking forward to for some time now. His passion, his desire has led him to this place in Jerusalem to spend these last days of his life on this earth. And nothing was going to keep him from accomplishing the task of God, and as it's called, the scheme of redemption, beginning all the way from the book of Genesis chapter 3 and verse 15, all throughout the Old Testament and into what we call the New Testament. But in this context, we're talking about the life of Jesus before the cross. And so nothing was going to keep the plan of God and the purpose of God through His Son Jesus Christ to redeem the world and bring salvation. I think we all understand that. But in this case, you have a situation where now Jesus has presented Himself as not only the Messiah, but also as King, as He enters into the city. We've studied about that. We've also noticed that Jesus presents Himself as judge. And we've noticed that in our text and Mark's account as well. And so that's also important. Won't go back and do that all over again, but I just invite you to read those passages with regards to that subject matter. Now, we are going to see Jesus as a teacher. And we're going to see how that in the past, it was very clear that God was going to send someone. And the word that is used is the word prophet. And Moses, in the book of Deuteronomy, in all other cases, but also other references, in the book of Exodus and so forth, reveals to us that it's always been the plan of God for His Son to come and to be a prophet, but also meaning a teacher of the will of God. And so now He is going to be seen. Just picture in your mind now that He's standing before the individuals there in the temple area. I'm sure He doesn't have a podium like I do. He doesn't have a Bible like I do, meaning in this form. He doesn't have notes to look at. He doesn't have a PA system. He doesn't have a nice place like this and comfort to describe but also teach the multitudes and the people that are there. He's simply standing up among those individuals that have come there because the Passover is upon them. And so the multitudes of people who are there for that reason, knowing that eventually Pentecost will be coming, they're very intent on listening and being taught by this man who is referred to as a rabbi. And so he's a teacher, and he's been a teacher for some years now. And so, in this particular context, beginning in verse 27, in this section, we're going to see some representatives who were already there. They are what is called the religious political establishment. Remember that? And the reason why I say that is because they are religious, but they're also political. Back then, during that particular time, even up to this day, it's still the same. I think we understand that in the Middle East. I think we understand the culture and society in which we live, but also back then it was the same. And so they were so committed to their, let's say, religion, but also to what it represented for them with regards to authority, but also prestige and everything that went with that. And so now they are going to descend upon Jesus Christ in the temple while He teaches. And in this teaching, we're going to see that the chief priest is going to be there. We also are going to see that the scribes and the Pharisees and the Herodians and the Sadducees are going to be there. And they make up what is called the Sanhedrin. You have 70-something people, men, who are in charge, if you will, to overlook and oversee the religious establishment and the children of Israel or the nation of Israel. And that's something that they took very serious. Now, I want you to understand, and I think it's in your handout, that there are some other people that are there. If you go over to chapter 12 and notice what it says in verse 37, there it says, the common people heard him gladly. And so, the common people were there. The average, everyday Jew, maybe even some proselytes, were there in the temple area. Let me ask you a question. Are you a common person? Would you represent those who are the common, everyday people who live during your time? Probably so. Oh, yes. Common people, everyday people. And they were the people that were following Jesus, many of them. They were listening. They were hearing. They were observing. They were seeing Jesus and how that Jesus performed, yes, miracles, signs, wonders, and miracles, but also how that they heard him teach these amazing things that they've never heard in their life. Now, you're going to see that Jesus is going to spend one of the hardest days of his ministry. And the reason why is because of what he's going to experience. And these individuals are going to be a part of that. Now, they're going to ask him some questions. And it's okay to ask questions. But you see, you've got to ask the question, and we'll think about this, but also consider this in a few moments. Why were they asking these particular questions? And so the questions that you're going to see in the next section in this particular part that we're going to be studying, that's going to take us into Matthew's account and Luke's account, I must warn you that everything that is said in Matthew's account and Luke's account, including Mark's account and some degree in John's account, you're not going to see everything that is said because Mark's gospel is not as wide or, let's just say, as robust or complete, if you will, as the other two Gospels. So you're going to have to go there if you're going to read, for instance, some of the other parables that are included in Matthew's account and Luke's account, but you don't see those parables in Mark's account, okay? So this morning, I want us to remember, I just want to go down the list. First of all, the first question that the chief priests and the scribes and the elders are going to ask Jesus is about authority. And then the next one is going to be about, well, the Pharisees, Herodians get into the act and they're going to ask him about their local responsibility, his responsibility when it comes to their responsibility, when it comes to the local government and our responsibility to the government in which we are under. And he's going to discuss the subject of taxes. Then the Sadducees are going to ask questions about eternity in Mark chapter 12. And then the last one is going to be from the scribes and about the subject of priority. What is the most important aspect of living a life for God? But that's not the only question. Jesus is going to listen to their questions and he's going to give them answers. But guess what? He's going to ask them also a question. And it's going to be the most important question that they could ever consider for their entire life, including us. And so he's going to ask a question as well. Now you're going to see a technique that Jesus uses in this discussion with these different individuals and characters now that are listening to Jesus. And that is responding to a question with what? A question. And that's okay. There's nothing wrong with that. But that's a technique that Jesus used many times, and we're going to get into the reason why he would use such a technique or means by which he could get some truth, if you will, out of an individual or a group of people. Now, let's read. In Mark chapter 11, look at verse 27. Then they came again to Jerusalem, and as he was walking in the temple, the chief priests and the scribes and the elders came to him. And they said to him, "By what authority are you doing these things? And who gave you this authority to do these things?" But Jesus answered and said unto them, so he's going to make a statement. We see this in verse 29, and it's this: "I also will ask you one question, then answer me, and not notice, and I will tell you by what authority I do these things. The baptism of John, was it from heaven or from men? Answer me." That's the emphasis, by the way. He didn't whisper, "Answer me." I'll just let you know, in the Greek here, it's not a whisper. "Answer me." He's not beating around the bush and he's not playing. "Answer me." You see, he understands what he's up against. He understands the individuals who are there and the reason why they're saying what they're saying and the reason for the questions and this very question that they ask. And so he wants an answer from them. Now, in that day in which they lived, and even before, going back, if you will, to the book of Deuteronomy, and I want you to go there with me, if you will, the book of Deuteronomy chapter 18, it was the right and responsibility of these individuals, the scribes and also the elders and the Sadducees, and especially the chief priests, to make sure that an individual who's teaching God's will and claims to be doing that, they were considered guardians of the law of Moses. And they had that right. And especially as they were chosen, these men, the Sanhedrin, had both the right and the responsibility to investigate anyone who claimed to be sent by God, and that included Jesus Christ. And the reason why we know that is because when you read in Deuteronomy chapter 18, verse 15, "The Lord your God will raise up for you a prophet like me from your midst, from your brethren, him you shall hear." This is a prophecy about what person class? Now, did they actually understand that? No. But there's a prophet coming, just like me, Moses says. "According to you, all your desire of the Lord your God in Horeb, in the day of the assembly," says, "saying, let me not hear again the voice of the Lord my God, nor let me see this great fire among, lest I die. And the Lord said to me, what they have spoken is good. I will raise up for them a prophet like you from among their brethren, and will be put my words in his mouth, and he shall speak to them all that I command him. And it shall be that whatever will not hear my words, which he speaks in my name, I will require it of him. But the prophet who presumes to speak a word in my name, which I have not commanded him to speak, or who speaks in the name of other gods, that prophet shall die. And if you say in your heart, how shall we know the words which the Lord has not spoken? When a prophet speaks in the name of the Lord, if the thing does not happen or come to pass, that is the thing which the Lord has not spoken, the prophet has spoken in presumptuously, and you shall not be afraid of him. Is that pretty clear, class? Pretty clear, right? So we've made our point that they had every right to be suspicious, every right to make sure that whoever is speaking in the name of God and claiming to be God's messenger or prophet or teacher is such. And so we have these individuals now, and they are in the temple, and now Jesus is with them. And what was he doing in the temple according to Luke chapter 20 and verse 1? I want you to go there because it is a very important verse, and I don't want you to miss it. Luke chapter 20 and verse 1. Now, it happened on one of those days that he taught the people in the temple and preached the gospel. That means the good news. The good news at that point in context is the fact that the kingdom of God is coming. Did John teach that? John the Baptizer? Did Jesus teach that? Yes. Did his 12 disciples, the apostles, also teach that? Shake your head, yes. So, you know, he's teaching them that something is coming. Something is before you. Something in the future. It is a prophecy. And so he's teaching the good news that the chief priests and the scribes, together with the elders, confronted him. Confronted him. So now we get the context. So we have the chief priests, we have the scribes, we have the elders, they're representing the Sanhedrin. They are known as the council. Councilmen, if you will. And they had prestige. Now remember, in this discussion that we had before, Jesus is very aware of the fact that these same men, the Sanhedrin, were very concerned about Jesus because he was turning the people's minds to him, and they were heeding what he said, and they were receptive, and he was very effective. And that's the reason why when you read in the book of John chapter 11 and verse 53, it says they plotted to kill him. Who's the they, class? The Sanhedrin council. The scribes and the chief priests and the Sanhedrins and, you know, and the Sadducees and the Pharisees and so forth. And so that's why we have this, you know, we have this reference here in Mark's account, and rightly so, they ask the question, by what authority are you doing these things? Think about it, what things? And who gave you this authority? These things refer to, in your mind, what is he talking about there when Mark gives this account and refers to these things? What's he talking about? All right, the gospel, that would refer to his teachings, right? All right, what he did in the temple, okay, like cleansing the temple. He just did that, you know, just the day before, right? Miracles, there you go, miracles. Did he perform some miracles in the temple? Yes. And so the people, the common people, along with the Sanhedrin, along with these religious elites, are noticing and they see the healing of the sick. They see the triumphant entry of Jesus Christ into the city earlier. They see Him teaching and preaching the good news of the gospel, and they're not excited about this because He's talking about, as John talked about, a coming kingdom. Now the question is, what is the motives of these individuals, the council, when they came to Jesus and confronted Him? Here's the question. Were they looking for truth? Were they open-minded or closed-minded? They were closed. They already had intent to kill Him. But they're in a pickle. They're in a dilemma. And why is that, class? They're losing their power, but notice again, where are they? They're in the temple. And who's listening to them have this discussion? The common person who's there for the right motive, let's just say. We've already learned that if you have a hard heart, it's usually because you have a closed mind to the truth, right? You're not willing to open up and listen without prejudice. And they were not that kind of person. And we know that because we have evidence. And the evidence is based on the text and Mark's account, and also we have from John's account that they, as I said before, they were so closed-minded. Now, remind yourself of what it says in your text in verse 18 of chapter 11. And the scribes and the chief priests heard it and sought how they might destroy Him, for they feared Him because all the people were astonished at His teaching. Now, I want you to listen, please. When it comes to spiritual matters, and you're studying with someone or you're talking with someone, it's always appropriate for that person and also yourself to ask questions. Would you agree with that? It's appropriate. It's needed. I mean, it's almost it's mandatory that you ask a question, especially if you don't understand, right? If there's a lack of knowledge there, you're seeking the truth and more understanding. Okay, what about this? And what about that? Now, when it comes to asking a question, one of the first things that you need to ask or consider is the matter of authority. Authority. I had a Bible study just recently on Friday. It lasted several hours. And where do you think I started my lesson? On authority. You have to establish that first. Now, yes, even before that, you want to talk about God and talk about His love and talk about His grace, talk about His mercy and the reason why He would even present to you and to me an opportunity to be saved. But from there, you want to start with authority. Because, think about it. Where does it all start? What is it all based on? So if you establish that, then you're going to be on good ground. But unfortunately, we don't see this here in the text. I don't see these men concerned about searching for the truth and understanding the truth. Rather, of course, their purpose was to expose Jesus before the crowd, the common people, and also to submit to them. This is someone that is unauthorized. This is someone that is self-appointed. This is someone that has come among you, from among you, and now he's meddling in certain things, and guess what? He doesn't have that. He has assumed many things, and he's wrong. He doesn't have that type of authority. Oh, by the way, who has that authority?
We do, they would say. So again, you're seeing some of the behind the scenes, but also in the heart of these individuals, the truth. And what I want for someone who studies the Bible with me or with you, let's say, you want them to open the Bible like they've never seen it before. And put your prejudices and your beliefs and your feelings and your emotions aside. And that's why the best way to study with somebody is to take them to the text and do what class? Let them read it for themselves. And you don't move to the next text, to the next point, until they understand that verse. That's why I told this individual, we're not in a hurry. We're not in a hurry today. It might take another study or another study or another study. And by the way, the individual that I've been studying with also, that has lasted up to 8 hours, and had two lessons, he's given me an opportunity to have another lesson, a third lesson. Thank you for your prayers. So we're going to do that Tuesday at 9:00 in the morning. So what I'm going to try to do is convince him again, let's just put all of our prejudices and our ideas and our beliefs and our emotions and feelings, and let's just look at the text. And we're not moving to the next point until you understand or I understand or we agree together. You see, folks, that's where you begin. Now, did Jesus in his 3.5 years, did he actually prove to them, give them enough evidence to say, I am the Messiah, the Son of the living God? I have a yes over here. Sure he did. And multitudes, the common person who was there, not everyone that was there, because many of the common people as well were influenced by what group of people? The Sanhedrins. Because we have texts, we have scripture that tells us that there were certain individuals that believed in Jesus, but they chose not to continue with their belief in Jesus because they knew that if they did, they would lose their place and their seat where? In the synagogue. Oh, by the way, you're not sitting in a very good place in the synagogue. The prime seats are up here, folks. They're right up here. That's where you want to be, because that means you're a powerful person. That's you have prestige and you have honor. Now, Jesus decides that he's going to answer their question. And he answers their question with a question. But when he does this, he's also going to expose their hypocrisy because he knows that they're hypocrites. Now, Mark is not going to give us what Matthew gives us in Matthew chapter 23 in this same discussion because, again, he's not giving us the full account. But what happens in Matthew chapter 23 with Jesus speaking to the Pharisees and the Sadducees and the Sanhedrin and the elders and so forth and so forth? He calls them what? Hypocrites over and over and over and over again. That's another discussion. And you're going ahead of me. Anyway, he's right. He's right. He is right. Now, he says, and I want us to look at something first, but again, he says now, notice, the baptism of John, was it from heaven or from men? And then he says, I want you to answer me. Look over in the book of Luke, and here's this reference again. The baptism, we're talking about baptism, aren't we? We're talking about baptism. John preached baptism or immersion, if you will. The disciples also are going to preach and teach the importance of baptism as well. We know that to be true. But in Luke chapter 7, what you have is like a discussion that Jesus has and who is present. And there he's discussing the messenger of God, which is John the Baptizer, John the Immerser. And I'm not going to go through the whole text, but I want you to read on down and notice what it says in verse 29 and verse 30, because I got to make a point here. He says, this is Luke now, "And when all the people heard him, even the tax collectors justified," and that just simply means when you think about the word justified, "declared him to be" what? Righteous. Justified means that God now looks at you as righteous in his sight. And by the way, Jesus has always been righteous. Perfectly. But now it says these people, even the tax collectors, justified God. And notice it says, "having been baptized with the baptism of John, but the Pharisees and the lawyers," who are the lawyers? They're the experts of the law. They're the scribes. "But the Pharisees and the lawyers rejected," notice, "the will of God for themselves, not having been baptized by him," by John the Immerser. Is it the will of God, class, that John, when he came preaching in the wilderness, for them to be baptized, was it the will of God? Was it the work of God? Say yes. Oh, by the way, remember in John chapter 6 and verse 29, what does it say? Jesus in his own word says that belief is what? A work of God. Do the work of God. Believe. So belief is a work. Baptism is a work of God. What does that mean? That means it originated, came from God. Has not a reference to the works of the law. It doesn't have a reference to the works of merit or deeds. It does not have a reference to works of the flesh. That's not the context. That's not what he's talking about. So baptism is a work of God, meaning the will of God. It originated with God. So if God willed it to be done, should you do it? If you lived during that time and John came preaching and teaching a baptism for the remission of sins, Mark chapter 1 verse 5 or 4, should you do it? Did the Pharisees not do it? They didn't do it. Did they do it? No, they did not. So, do you get this point here? Do you understand? You got to have that foundation. You got to understand what he's trying to convey. And that's why he asked this question. And that's why he responds to them in this way. And notice, why would he take them all the way back to the baptism of John? Why? Follow me, if you will, to Malachi. Malachi chapter 3 verse 1. Here's the prophecy of the messenger God's going to send to introduce and pave the way for the Messiah. And it says, "Behold," and I want you to notice the phraseology, "Behold, I will send my messenger and he will prepare the way before me." Who is this class? John the Baptizer. "And the Lord whom you seek will suddenly come to his temple." You see it fulfilled now? Where's Jesus? In the temple. Did God say that in Malachi? Yes. In the temple. "Even the messenger of the covenant." Oh my goodness. "In whom you delight, behold, he is coming, says the Lord of hosts." Now when we began this class in Mark's Gospel, chapter 1. I want you to turn there with me, if you will. Mark's Gospel, chapter 1. And notice what it says in verse 1. Are you there? It says, "The beginning of the Gospel of Jesus Christ, the Son of God, as it is written in the prophets." What prophet? Malachi, chapter 1, verse 1 and 2. Behold, I will send my messenger before your face, who will prepare your way before you, the voice of one crying in the wilderness. Prepare the way of the Lord, make his path straight. John came baptizing in the wilderness and preaching a baptism of repentance for the remission of sins. Wow. And then all the land of Judea and those from Jerusalem went out to him and were all baptized by him in the Jordan, confessing their sins. Now there's a context here. And the reason why John did that and why they were confessing their sins, because they were sinners. Because they had forsaken what law class? The law of Moses. They were still under the law of Moses. You see it coming together? See how simple it is? And so what do you have here? You have Jesus reminding them that God before, hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of years before, some almost 500 years before this all took place, this prophecy now is being fulfilled. And that's why he says in John 7, verse 17, notice these words, if any man is willing to do his will, he shall know of the teaching, whether it is of God or whether I speak from myself. Now, folks, if God is speaking the truth in the past, in context, and you understand that the same principle, the same truth is being taught today in context, it's still what? Truth. And it must be followed. Just because society or culture says, no, we've got to change it. No, we've got to do this. We've got to, you know, tweak it here and do that. Doesn't mean that. No, you don't have that right. You don't have what class? The authority to do that, do you? Do you? And so this Jewish council did not accept John's teaching about the coming of the Messiah and even about the will of God for them to be baptized. And if they would have obeyed the message of John about the Lord, they would have gladly had received his authority, not only his authority, but also John's authority to do what he did. And so they're caught in the dilemma, aren't they? And see the question mark? What is it from heaven or is it from men? You know the answer, don't you? Where did it come from, class? From heaven. Prophesied many, 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 many years before, and it came to pass. John the Baptist, or John the Immerser, was not a ghost. He was a real person. Now, you go to your text and notice what it says. And it's pretty interesting. They're having this little council among themselves. And they reason among themselves, saying, if we say from heaven, he will say, why then did you not believe him? But if we say from men, they feared the people, for all counted John to have been a prophet indeed. So whatever way they go, they're in the dilemma. See, they're not asking what is true, class. They're not asking what is right. Are they concerned about that? No, what they're asking is what is expedient for them. Does that sound like, I don't mean to be political, does that sound like a politician? Huh? Come on now. I mean, that's right, right? Which way is the wind? Which way is the wind? You know, it should be based on truth and wanting to know the truth. What is true? What is right? Not expedient. Not what is safe for me so that I can be reelected or stay on this council, right? Because what would have happened if one stood up and said, wait a minute, guys, hey, he's right. He wants an answer? He's right. I know I've been on this council for 20 years. Guess what? He's right. It's from heaven. What would happen to that man? Twitter would be going, wild, right? People would just say, Facebook member? He's not going to be my friend anymore. He had been kicked out and persecuted. Now, just remember, who's listening? Who's listening, class? The people are listening. You think Jesus made his point? And they're listening. These common, everyday people. Because you see, he has now exposed their hypocrisy and shown them to be politicians and shown them to be crowd pleasers. Because remember, there was politics going on in that religious group, don't you think? Oh, don't tell me that, David. In religion, there's politics? I mean, there's crowd pleasers? And that's one of the reasons why these men were so upset. That's one of the reasons why these men were so against Jesus Christ. Because, you see, he was not going to bow down to their corruption. Do you remember what John said in John chapter 11? I've got mine underlined. We're almost out of time. We're going to go through this text again when we come back next Sunday morning. But notice what it says. In John chapter 11, verse 48. If we let him alone like this. Who's the we? The Sanhedrin. Religious leaders. The Pharisees. If we let him alone, everyone will believe in him. And the Romans will come and take away both our place and nation. Place. What does that mean, class? Position. Prestige. Authority. What else? Power. And even money. Remember what Jesus did in the temple? What did he cleanse? The money changers. Who authorized the money changers? Who gave them permission to do all that? Don't you think there was some cutback? Some under the table? So now we understand. Now we see. And of course, obviously, they're embarrassed. Got to stop there. We're going to get into the parable that Jesus gives them after this, okay? Now there's going to be two other parables that you're going to find in Matthew's account and Luke's account. So read those other two parables. We're not going to read or study the other two parables, but we're going to study the one parable that Mark references in chapter 12. So please read that. Read your handout. Study it for yourself. All right, let's stop right there.